to this, the June 28th, 2009 edition of Ford Forum. This is John Quinlan with
Stephanie Woods.
Hey, well, this is, it's good to have you.
It's good to have you back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Unfortunately, or actually not.
You're coming back.
You were
I'm leaving.
To embark on an important journey. And so, yeah, you're going to be gone for a little while. You want to tell folks what you're up to this next month or so?
Well, I'm taking off the next month and a half to continue my training for the AIDS ride. And between three jobs, it's been kind of hard to
just a little bit
get my butt in the saddle.
Not to mention you deserve a life in there somewhere too, Steph, you know, so hey.
So I did 40 miles yesterday, and
wow.
I'm not even sore today, not like at all.
Well, that's excellent.
I said like I'm from the valley or something. I'm going out in a valley girl kind of way. So yes, that's what I've been doing, and I'll enjoy another day of 50, 60 miles perhaps while you're having fun here.
Well, that's a great cause, and we're really proud of you here. And we hope that some of you listening, fans of the show, will be able to support Steph in her important effort. And you can find out how to support her either by going to the Act 7 AIDS Ride website, or if you go to our blog, which you can access off of forwardforum.net. It's actually forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. It's a little window up there in the right-hand column, a little place where you click on Steph's picture and you go right to the page. It'll give you an update on her fundraising activities and tell you all about some of the reasons that she's riding. So we hope you all will be inspired to support Steph in this important effort. If you're so inclined, why don't you give us a call here at 321-1670. Let us know that you're up to that activity, and we'll be glad to acknowledge that contribution on the air as well.
Or maybe you're in the ride and you're doing it yourself, and you're going to be volunteering in some capacity, right, John?
That's right. I have to back out of the
riding portion,
the ride itself
it.
This year, but I'm gonna try to be there by next year. We'll
ramp
see
up
what
for
we
that
do.
Next year.
You got it. So, anyway, important activity. But we've got a wonderful show ahead, one of our very favorite guests of all time be joining us, I think, for the third or fourth time now in Ford Forum, and that's Kate Clinton. And Kate is someone who is just a remarkable social commentator. She does things like write a regular column for The Progressive, a regular contributor to The Huffington Post and a lot of other progressive outposts on the web. But most of us probably know her in her role as a stand-up comedian, doing politically pithy, cutting-edge, sharp-witted humor. And she's entertained here in Madison many times before. Prominent leader in the LGBT rights community. Much of her humor has to do with that experience. And anyway, it should be a great pleasure speaking to her. And she's got a great book out called, what is it?
I Told You So.
I Told You So. She's also about to take off on a great tour all over the U.S. and Canada. I think at the end of the summer, she's going to be hosting a very special event featuring Lily Tomlin. Lots of stuff to talk about.
Busy lady.
Actually, KateClinton.com is a place to find out about all of this. And we'll be highlighting that throughout. But before we do that, there's another event I know that is actually near and dear to Kate Clinton's heart because I know she's headlined there in the past, and that is the National Women's Music Festival, which came as a surprise to you. Is actually
I think they're two different events.
There still are two different events.
Well, I was looking them up online. We should probably have Jane.
Okay.
Verify that for us, confirm it. But I think they're two different events.
All right. Well, Jane Weldon is here, and she's one of the folks coordinating the festival locally. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So actually, could you clarify, is there still what people know well as a Michigan-based women's festival as well? Or
there is the Michigan Women's Festival. They are two separate events.
They are two separate events. Okay.
Yeah. The National Women's Music Festival, the one that is now in Madison, is the first. It's the original. And we're separated by 1 year of age.
Okay.
National began in 1974 in Michigan in 75.
What threw me off is on the webpage and the narrative, I think it makes reference to avoiding mosquitoes and porta-janes and canceled concerts because of rain, that kind of thing. And perhaps just
right.
Kind of a tongue-in-cheek reference. A little different here when you're inside and in a place like the Marriott, which is the case here, right?
Absolutely. They're both amazing events with great tradition and history and very important, but different. Somewhat of the same purpose, but you know, it does provide a different opportunity for those who don't prefer to sleep outside.
Is it right? The history of this was that this was traveling all over, and now it seems like the festival maybe has found a home here. Is that right?
We have. I mean, it's never really been the intent. The festival was born in Champaign-Urbana in '74, and after 1 year, it was basically thrown off campus for being too, you know, too edgy, and found a home in Bloomington, Indiana, at Indiana University, where it remained about for about 20 years. And then short stint at Ball State University, a couple of years in Ohio, both at Ohio State and Kent State. And then looking for a new home after that, spent 2 years at ISU, Bloomington Normal. And at that point, you know, we take the survey information we get from people who attend pretty seriously, and especially now when people are making a commitment to spend the money, and 4 days usually involves some time off from work. What are they looking for? And it seems that although we continue to try to make this an intergenerational transfer of music and culture, that median age had reached a point where they basically didn't want to sleep in dorms anymore.
Interesting, okay.
Bunk beds weren't the choice, and really all of the opportunities that we saw there were around hospitality in a way to move it to really what feels a lot more like a conference than a festival. So we came here to Madison, spent last year at the Alliant Energy Center and the Clarion Hotel, and now Marriott West.
And as we go into this, we just wanted to provide just a little bit of a selection. You have a great website that plays some music. In this case, this is Zoe Lewis and Small is Tremendous.
Right.
And I'm wondering what all this fighting's for. Underneath it all, we're just the same. So let's start to peel away the layers of our onion hearts. When I'm far away, the people are kind.
And one of the great parts of the website is you've got sort of a little mini jukebox at the bottom, a little bit of everything in terms of the music. What kind of styles are represented?
We really try to spread this across all genres. We have a number of drummers this year in a section we're calling Cultural Connections, really drumming from all over the world. We have comedy, four comics this year, Lisa Koch, Vicky Shaw, Roxana Ward, and Maggie Casella. Music-wise, we have Lucy Liu Tremblay, Zoe Lewis, as you know, Sarah Betton, Patrice Pike. We have a number of new artists that we've discovered in what we're calling the National Women's Music Festival Discovery Competition. We've held it in several cities around the country, and bringing those artists together to compete on Thursday and Sunday on our stage. And the winner of that actually gets a main stage spot for next year. We have the pianist Adrian Torf coming. We have Pamela Means. It's really a packed lineup. It's one of those sort of adrenaline rush things that starts at 2 o'clock on Thursday, and you pretty much don't stop until 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Wow, so. That's incredible. And you know, one thing that was a pleasant revelation to me, I mean, knowing the traditions of the Michigan Women's Festival, and by the way, I mean, you know, room of one's own in the broader sense is an important concept, and women's space is important. But in your case, you do have a welcome mat out to men who might be interested in women's music as well. Is that right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Everyone is welcome at this festival. In fact, one rule that we hold to is that the reason this festival was designed and created in 74 was to make a space for women who didn't have the ease of finding the same spaces in festivals and stages at the time. So our prevailing rule is that a woman has to be the front in the band. On our main stage, it is women only. We have a stage called She Rocks, which tends to be some of the younger, more aggressive music. And many of those women have male side musicians. So both Patrice Pike and Sarah Bettens have large male bands coming with them, and we think it's great. The music is for everybody. This is just to create a space for women to sort of front those.
Just out of curiosity, you mentioned Adrian Torf in passing, and she was a guest on our show last fall a couple of times. Mm-hmm. She came to town. There was an exhibit that was sponsored in terms of the homosexuals, an exhibit basically about the homosexual experience during the Nazi era. And she had written a very moving piece explicitly for that and came for both the beginning and opening ceremonies. And I know she has a wide array of different types of music, from classical to jazz. Do you have a sense of what kind of things she'll be bringing this time?
She's actually going to be doing pretty much a mix. She originally was coming to our artist breakfast, which is sort of our fundraising arm of that, just to play there. And then we decided that was not enough. So we have her on her main stage doing some of her old work, some of her new work. And then she's also bringing that piece that she wrote here and some of the kids who are involved in it.
Oh, so Proud Theater folks are going to be involved, perhaps.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
like.
So
oh, great.
They'll be coming in as well.
Well,
she's going to, across the 4 days, she'll be doing a lot of different things.
Well, that's excellent. Well, Gene, I apologize with a little bit of time today, and we want to we'll plan ahead to next year, and we'll perhaps in the months preceding next year's festival get you on and some of the participants and do our best to help you get out the word locally. Again, this is such a wonderful opportunity, this national festival right here in Madison, and as you said, it's open to everyone from every background, both genders, just a great chance to hear some wonderful music. If you can give us those particulars again of the dates, the time, the place.
Absolutely. The festival starts on Thursday the 2nd, runs through Sunday the 5th, and you can find out more information at WIAonline.org. That's where you can find information about registration and tickets.
Okay. Gene Welland, thank you so much. Best wishes for a great success this year.
Thanks a bunch. Take care.
All right. Thanks. You too. Steph, sound like something you might be interested in?
I would love to go. I'll be out of town.
Oh, no.
But, yeah.
But is it nice to know that this is something that's going to be around in Madison for years to
come?
Oh,
yeah. So. I'll be biking below the border.
Okay.
In the enemy territory. Sorry. But yes, I think it'd be a fantastic festival, and I'd like to go. And I'm glad the two exist, got that out of the way, because friends of mine are going to the Michigan Women's Fest, and I thought, wow, they got tickets to nothing if they're going to that. And it's coming here. Anyway.
There we go. Well, this leads us into a nice transition for our next guest. Again, someone that we just love to have in this program, Kate Clinton. For the last 28 years, has been known for the stand-up comedic work that she's done, but she's interacted just in a whole variety of different media things, programming for public television. A recent documentary she produced, a series of CDs. Also just someone who's a real leader in the LGBT rights community in many different ways. Just someone who shows that power of storytelling and performance art as a means of advancing social justice. Kate Clinton, welcome to Forward Forum.
Thank you. Good to hear you.
Yeah, good to have you back again.
That's great.
I don't know if you heard a little bit of the interview they mentioned on the website. You've been at past National Music Women's Festivals.
I have been. One of my most exciting performances ever. I remember, I think it was 1982, when it was in Bloomington, I played on the day stage, and I was so excited. And it's a great festival, and I'm glad, even though it's been traveling around for a couple of years, that it is now located in Madison, and it just sounds great. Like, they really have been listening to their clients, and they've really put together a great few days of music and culture and age, and I'm so glad they're not in bunk beds. I had a splitting headache. I remember that so clearly when I did my first show on the day stage, and produced by Dino Serp from Indianapolis. And, oh, my goodness, and I know it was because it was like 108 in the dorms.
And, that's a little warm.
I'm very, very happy that it's there.
The movement, feminist movement, LGBT rights movement, we're all maturing a little bit in ways we need to acknowledge. So
I know.
That's right.
People say, are you going to Michigan? I always say, when they build a hotel.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, last time you were on a program, it was just, I think, a couple weeks before the election, and you were out there encouraging us all to get out and make our voices heard. But things have changed a little, and Steffi, I think you have a question about that.
Before the election, people were asking you, aren't you going to miss George
me,
Bush?
Steph, I'm not buying this going on a bike training tour. Okay?
You're not buying it?
I happen to see that you've rented a place in Provincetown for the next month and a half. Come on.
Provincetown.
It's time that you level with the people.
As in P-Town, right?
Yes.
That's what you're referring to as, Provincetown. I'm gonna have to say that from now on, P-Town.
Yes, P-Town. Oh,
yes.
I hope you are going to do the ride. Where is
absolutely.
Where does it start and end up?
It starts here in Madison at the Capitol and then goes around the state and ends right back at the Capitol. So we get a good taste of the state. It used to go from Chicago to Minnesota, but that's changed, and it's been this way now for 7 years.
Wonderful.
I'm very excited. We have a lot of hills in Wisconsin. So
I know. The Dales.
Yes.
The Dales. I know.
The Dales.
It's very hilly. Much more than people realize.
Yeah. Even here around town. So it'll be great. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Now you can ask me the question.
Yes, well, I'm wondering, are you going to have any material now that, you know, George Bush won't be around? Is it going to be difficult to do stand-up during the Obama administration?
You know, apparently I'm always going to have Dick Cheney.
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah.
So, and Sarah Palin.
Right. Dan Quayle in a ponytail, we call it.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and Dick Cheney will always be around. So, he's talking more now than he did for the last 8 years, although I'm kind of happy to know where he is and that he's out of the bunker.
I'm
so,
still
yes,
laughing about that,
if that
Dan
tails
Quayle.
Off, if there's a problem and he actually shuts up, apparently I will always also have the Pope.
Well, you know, despite that, you know, I mean, people have said the same thing about The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and others, and you know, there hasn't been any lack of things to cover.
Oh,
I think
no,
one of the things you talked about, unfortunately, is one of the things that we faced on Election Day was not only a wonderful victory, but also just a really heartbreaking defeat in California.
It was a heartbreaker. In California, in Florida, I mean, you know, they also in Arkansas and Arizona, we called them the prop hates, and we could not defeat them. And it was so weird. I really never felt gayer. Everybody was celebrating on election night, and I was like, you know, once again, not fully invited to the party.
Yeah, yeah. But, well, you know, but so it's been a bit of a roller coaster, but nonetheless, you know, an important transition. And one of the things I wanted to share with listeners is a very special ritual that you conducted during inaugural week. Is the term sage?
Yes, we saged.
You saged the White House. You did it down at DuPont Circle, but nonetheless, it was aimed focused at the White House.
You couldn't get close to the White House. There was so much security. And what had started when George Bush, you remember him, went to Machu Picchu, which he doesn't remember, and he was there about 10 minutes and did, you know, So You Think You Can Dance with the people, and then they helicoptered him out, and when, like, the next day, they called in the shamans and the priests of the area to sage the area, like to light sage sticks and smudge out the bad spirits. And I made a joke. I said, we should do that to the White House when he goes. And it grew, and the night before the inauguration, when the White House was still a crime scene, we met at DuPont Circle. About 2,000 people showed up, and we saged, and the smoke went down toward the White House, and just the right moment, and who knew? We should have saged Congress as well. But,
I encourage our listeners to get the full experience. Just go to YouTube and plug in Sage and Kate Clinton, and you'll find it. But here's a little bit of a choppily excerpted section here, and I think you sort of set this up by it's sort of the Catholic version of call and response. It's sort of reminiscent of or something to that effect, and then you bring the audience into it, and then there's a whole string of things that we're glad to be able to finally purge. So
Yes. Here
we go.
And then we would all sing back, like the priest would go, "We are really sinful people." And we'd all go, maybe, I'm not sure. But I want to reclaim that tonight as we begin to loosen up some of the negative stuff that we've experienced for the last 8 years. I'm going to sing the best I can, the first part, and you're going to sing the response. And your response is, "Hey, hey, hey, goodbye." All right, let's hear you do it. 1, 2, 3. Hey, 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 goodbye. Are you feeling it?
Yeah.
All right, stop feeling it. Here we go. Stolen and rigged elections and voter suppression.
Hey, 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 goodbye.
The axis of evil, weapons of mass destruction, my pet goat. Preemptive wars, the Patriot Act, illegal wiretapping, Walter Reed, waterboarding, kangaroo courts, indefinite detentions, loss of habeas corpus, and other extraordinary renditions, Abu Ghraib, I can't hear you, Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, financing, televangelicals, socialized losses and privatized profits, federal homophobia, sexual hypocrisy, electoral gay bashing and anti-gay violence, don't ask, don't tell, all war. All war.
Yeah, that was Kate Clinton, the Sage Ceremony.
That was great. I've never heard it.
Oh, you haven't heard it?
No.
You were terrific.
That was fabulous.
Course,
it was.
Pretty
wonderful.
Much covered it all right there, you know, I mean, I suppose. But no. There's so much more to talk about. But, you know, a couple things also strike me off of that. It's just the interconnection of all these issues with the struggle for LGBT rights. And you know, that's particularly important on today. Mm-hmm. And we're really honored to have you here on this historic weekend. But this is the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion. And do you have some reflections as we go into this conversation, why that history is important for younger people to realize, and why it's important also to realize it's connected to other civil rights struggles, other important advances?
Well, I just came in from the Gay Pride March here in New York, the Stonewall 40th. It was fabulous. And, you know, it's all ages and really wonderful young people. The Stonewall veterans were there riding on a tram. And, you know, it's very, very exciting. And I think what's important is to remember that so much of that time in 40 years ago, it came out of the feminist movement, it came out of the anti-war movement, it came out of struggles for racial justice. That's where we come from. And that's where we're most successful. And I think when we make those connections, when our movement really is about peace and it's really about social justice and racial justice, and when it's all of those things and feminism, that's when I think we really do our best work. When we sort of get sidetracked into kind of, you know, the niche marketing of gender identity, then I think we really get sidetracked. But when we put them all together and work with all of our allies, that's when I think it's, you know, we do our best work. And, you know, I think that the problem of every rights movement is really about keeping our history and passing it on. And I think this was a wonderful opportunity, and it continues to really talk to younger people about, you know, what it was like 40 years ago and how far we've come. You know, I think that there's a lovely, I always enjoy just that kind of fabulous sense of entitlement that young people have, which was, you know, when we were marching and protesting on the nights after Proposition 8 and all of those evil propositions passed, we were down at the Mormon church protesting, and there were young people there, and they were just like, they're taking away our what?
Uh-huh.
And so it's, you know, we do have those moments that remind people that we still have a lot of work to do. And I think that, you know, making sure that there's an extraordinary exhibit at the New York Public Library on Stonewall. And so you go by last night I was at the Dyke March, which is hilarious. And it starts at the public library, and there is, you know, a big, huge banner on the front of the library about Stonewall. And, you know, I mean, we've made enormous progress. It was just so exciting to see, but you know, we just have to keep telling our history and going on.
Kate, tell our listeners about Stonewall. People might not be familiar with what happened. Will you give us a brief synopsis of what happened then?
What happened was on June 28th, 1969, the police had been, raiding gay bars in the village, and they went in to raid the Stonewall Inn bar. And, you know, they would go in, and then they would send patrons out, and they would be picked up and put in the paddy wagon and, you know, taken down to jail. And this night they sent them out, and they protested. And the protest lasted for, like, three nights. People just kept coming back. And, the gay organizers, and these were kids, you know, they were, like, homeless gay kids. There were drag queens. There were a few of our finest stone butches were there. And a lot of people who had been doing a lot of political activism in the New York area really saw an opportunity to really make something of it. So they started, you know, leafleting it and calling it a special moment in our history, and that's really how it started.
Just a clarification from earlier before we go into the break, you mentioned the Dyke March last night. We're still educating our audience to a certain extent, which is mixed, about LGBT terminology. It might be a little confusing because we had a gay male guest a couple of weeks ago who really loved Holland, and we should clarify, the Dyke March has nothing to do with Holland, but never mind, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's about the lesbian.
I was slung low and so gung-ho for anything that got me to start. I had a moon rock, I had a moon roll, but I couldn't find the spark. Flip of a half eye, a glimpse, the good life, and the clouds began to fade. I'm turning this B-side around to a delight. Blue skies, I stay. She was a dad.
Stephanie Woods with
John Quinlan
here
working the board for the first time in a while.
We're flipping around. And we are so happy to have Kate Clinton with us, social commentator and lesbian comedian, among other things. Kate, I just want to jump into it here. Tell us about yourself. Our listeners may not be familiar with you. Some of them probably are. Where did you grow up? What inspired you? How did you get to where you are at right now?
I taught high school English for 8 years, which is perfect preparation for doing stand-up comedy. And the crowd comes every day, and you learn how to work the room. But I wanted to try stand-up comedy, and I just kept talking about it. And finally, my best friend booked me in a club, and she said, "You're on in a month. I don't want to hear about it anymore." And that's how I started. And then that was 1981, March of 81, and it's been a slow growth since then, very organic. I am not an overnight success, but it doesn't go away as fast either.
I know on the website it was kind of fun, and the website, by the way, highly recommended. Just a really good chance to see these beautiful pictures and all these interactions you have with people all over. But one of the things that stood out was a couple of your former high school students, I think, said, "Wow, that's my teacher up there." But it strikes me, you know, being a teacher, you know, there's some of the same attributes you have to be a successful stand-up comedian, in terms of, you know, engaging people, drawing them in, keeping them occupied. And, you know, high school students would probably be one of your toughest audiences in that sense.
Absolutely. In the spring, when they've all been accepted at college, and those first nice days of spring, and they don't care. One time I realized that I was teaching a class of seniors, and I was talking to everyone's right cheek because they were looking out the window at the lawnmower guy going back and forth. And so I left the room, and I went and stood on the back of the riding mower and waved. And they all remember that. I had not come out then, and I would say to them, when I see them now, I say, "Did you know I was gay?" And they're all like, well, they all say, "We knew you were funny."
Oh.
And I say, "Well, did you know I was gay?" And they're like, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, why didn't you tell me?"
Because at the time you didn't know?
I didn't know. No. Well, I sort of knew, but I really hadn't come out. And, you know, they're like, "Yeah, we knew." I said, "Well, how did you know?" And they said, "Fry boots."
Is that an inside joke? I'm not getting it.
Actually, I'm not getting it either. So
I didn't either.
Inside,
I don't know.
Totally indicated
about.
That was a lesbian.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I lived with a lesbian family for 6 years. I feel so, well, what can I say? Related to teaching and education, I don't know if you're aware of this, but something I just heard the last couple of weeks is that Kevin Jennings, you know, who founded mm-hmm. this great group called Glisten,
yeah.
for supporting LGBT kids in our schools. He's been nominated to become Deputy Secretary of Education,
yes.
Really a high up post. Of course, the religious right is deluging the Obama administration with all mm-hmm. kinds of negative stuff about mm-hmm. all of this. So first of all, we encourage all of our listeners to send words of support his way.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, wouldn't that be a powerful thing to have somebody who actually gets it at that level of government?
Absolutely.
What kids go through?
Absolutely, and somebody who was a teacher.
Yeah.
Somebody who, you know, has experience from the ground up and has wonderful managerial skills and is very inspirational speaker. I just think it's a wonderful thing. And you know that we're doing something right if we get all that response negatively. But, you know, here's somebody who could really push a safe schools bill, who could really work on, anti-violence issues of kids in schools and anti-bullying. So I think it's a wonderful choice. And you know a good leader when that leader leaves and the organization still continues very strongly. And the woman that's replaced him is named Eliza Baird, and she is absolutely wonderful. She's very strong and a great organizer and has been with the organization for a while, so there's great continuity, you know, at a time when there's definitely a rise of anti-gay violence. Whereas studies have shown that there's been a decrease in violence in lots of categories, there has been a terrible rise in anti-gay violence. and especially among kids. So, you know, it's wonderful that Kevin has gotten this job, and it's great that we also have a wonderful executive director to take his place.
Absolutely.
Kate, what's happened in Massachusetts over the last 5 years since gay marriage was legalized? Give us some gay rights developments. Has the sky fallen yet?
No, I would like to point out, actually, that the Commonwealth still stands. It's actually kind of boring, and people are getting married. And also in Massachusetts, they have health care for all of their citizens. So my feeling is that health care for all citizens, and if they make us wait any longer, we will demand with the marriage equality, we have to demand for health care for everyone, too.
How did that same state elect a Mitt Romney? I just don't understand that.
Well, I guess it's pretty traditional in many, many states to have a really great, have a great legislature and then have a nut job for a governor, or the other way around.
One could argue Wisconsin has some of that history. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And I do have to give a shout out to my Progressive magazine from Madison,
yeah.
Wisconsin, 100 years old this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very honored to be writing for them, as
yeah.
always.
That was a fantastic musical festival.
Oh, I know.
My goodness. Ani and the Indigo Girls and Melissa Ferrick. It was a fantastic night.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, I had some of my best gay friends were getting married.
And Matt Rothschild.
And I had to go.
Matt Rothschild was our guest, and working with you was among one of the many highlights he mentioned, as well as working with Irvashit. So,
uh-huh.
So
yep.
you were well thought of it that week.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we actually do want to make sure one of the things that is out there is right now a really wonderful chance to find out more about some of the stuff that you've written about over the years is your book.
Yes, and, I have a brand new book out from Beacon Press. It's my third book, and it's called I Told You So, which I think explains it all. And it's a collection of some of the essays that I've written for The Progressive over a 3-year period. I've written in other places as well, The Advocate, the Women's Review of Books. And then there are a lot of pieces that were translated from the Bloggerian, which is a whole other language when you write for a blog.
The Bloggerian.
The Bloggerian, early century Bloggerian. And so that it, you know, because you read blogs that you've written and you're like, I don't even remember that what that was about. So I edited and rewrote and combined lots of blogs, and also wrote some pieces that have never appeared anywhere. They're longer pieces, which were really great to write. They're only in the book. So I have the book, which is out, and also there's an audio CD of me reading. It's an abridged selection, some of my favorites. With a special introduction that, you know, is just for the audio CD. So that's been totally fun.
And we want to point out some of the highlights of the book. And actually, I've got a couple of questions. I want my gay TV, Curb Your Cynicism, Weight Loss and Women in the Media, Hillary Clinton, Faith-Based Comedy, The Palin Effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I laughed out loud at your the whole essay that you had on the we. And I actually should probably grab the book, but so many things in your book made me laugh, and I liked that one especially. I also thought it was really sweet that you thanked your brother for his service in Vietnam. He was caught off guard by that. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was in Provincetown. It was Memorial Day weekend a couple of years ago, and I was just we had company, and we had brought them to this lobster place or lobster salad. You have to get a lobster roll there, you know that line. And I was just kind of waiting for them to come out and was listening to Garrison Keillor, who was doing an amazing show on Memorial Day, and they were doing a lot of songs from World War II. Just, it was so poignant.
Yeah.
And I was really moved, and I went home and I called my brother who had served in Vietnam, and I just called and I said, you know, thank you so much for doing that. Thank you for serving. Because it was never anything he would talk about. There were some stories that, you know, just sounded horrible. And but he never really elaborated or told them once, and then it became family lore. But so it was very interesting because I called him and thanked him, and he said, you know, you're the second person that's thanked me today. And ever since then, I've just, you know, I really like to you know, bring it out of him, talk a little bit more, especially mm-hmm. with the, you know, the service of so many young men and women in Iraq. So, mm-hmm. and he's opening up now, you know, 40 years later.
Do you think we finally arrived at a point where we can support those folks who, for various reasons, have been a part of the war, gone over, without supporting the war itself?
Yes, I do. I think that people are very clear about that. I think the soldiers themselves know that.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to, you know, when people have talked to them, especially when they're out of the military, that, you know, they were in and they were like, why are we here?
The other part of that essay that made me laugh was that you say Garrison Keillor, and sometimes his breathy voice is a little too pervy for me. I laughed so hard. That's why I don't like listening to him.
I know.
Exactly.
One time I did a show in Minneapolis in that very theater. And I started, and I had them place the mic exactly where he always stood, and it was May, and, you know, May in the prom time, and I did a whole sort of Garrison Keillor-esque Lake Wobegon story of a young girl going to pick up her prom date, who was another girl, and how the neighborhood was all excited, and, you know, it was definitely a fairy tale at that point. But it was great, and I did
sort
that.
Sort of a fairy home companion.
Sorry,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, sorry.
John is just
what?
I'm sorry. I said sort of a fairy home companion. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, nice.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, well. Okay.
Thank you. But,
so
I'm taking it.
Your book is so great, though, because you're all over the place on a whole bunch of different topics. The other thing that I brought up a few moments ago in Kate Clinton's book, I Told You So, your ideas for the Wii. You have your own customized games, such as Wii Voting and Wii Gay Marriage. Will you tell us about that?
Yes. And I think there's probably Wii Bike Riding. There should be. But I'm struck by people who are just completely interested in, you know, people who might not get physically involved in anything are just completely gaga for Wii. So I thought, well, we should have other things that would make people become civically minded or, you know, become involved in civic pursuits. So I thought Wii Voting would be very good. And, you know, we can go from there. But, you know, anything to get people involved.
All right. We're always speaking with Kate Clinton. We've got to take our last break. Again, she is the author of a great series of essays. We've been touching on some of them here, called I Told You So. Just came out in March and available, including locally here at Rumor One's own bookstore and at bookstores across the country. I encourage you to check out that. Also, KateClinton.com is kind of one-stop shopping to find out about a whole variety of other media that Kate has been involved with, DVDs on television, and some other CD representations of her work.
I was slung low and so gung-ho for anything that got me to start. I had a moon rock, I had a moon roll, but I couldn't find the spark. Flip of a high five.
This is Forward Forum. I'm Stephanie Woods.
And John Quinlan here.
And
we are listening to music. It's going to be featured at this weekend's National Women's Festival.
Women's
Festival out of Marriott. So,
and we're delighted to have Kate Clinton with us, author of I Told You So, social commentator, lesbian comedian, woman extraordinaire. She's with us today, and we're delighted to have her. And if you'd like to call in as well, 321-1670, *123 on your U.S. cellular phone.
And Kate, we'll come back to your to some of the specific chapters in your book in just a second, but one thing I definitely wanted to ask you about in terms of contemporary events is the Sonia Sotomayor nomination and
mm-hmm.
The way that some of the folks on the right have really injected gender and race in inappropriate ways here. You know, Sonia has that statement that she made when she decided, anyway, from several years ago, basically that she said, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life. That's been taken, I think, distorted, and they've called for apologies and other things, but I just don't think they got it.
We hold that sentence to be self-evident, but apparently not. You know, I think that what we're watching is the really decline of the patriarchy. Yay, the white straight guys are having a hard time. And, you know, I think that they're clinging on and just as usual, twisting those statements. I think it's a brilliant statement, and they're going to say that, you know, she has empathy. God forbid somebody would have empathy for people who are poor, people who are not white, people who are, you know, don't have the social capital that everyone else has to trade on in the justice system. So I think she's wonderful, and I also personally think that that her ankle was broken by Newt Gingrich.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, that's my theory. And that Hillary Clinton hurt her elbow by nudging Barack Obama for gay rights.
Which needs a lot of nudging right
yes,
now.
Yes, it does.
That's true. Actually, while we're on that subject, given what's happened since the administration took office, or more importantly, what hasn't happened, do you think mm-hmm. our community has reason to be pretty angry at lack of action?
I think that he's got a lot on his plate, absolutely. Two wars, an economy that's really in trouble, and you know, trying to pass health care. But I also think he can do a lot just by, you know, you get the feeling that they're still freaked out by gays in the military in the beginning of the Clinton administration, and that a lot of those old Clinton people are now in the Obama administration, and they are, and they just, like Rahm Emanuel, he just doesn't want their administration to be derailed by an issue like gays in the military. So I think that's their hesitation. But, you know, that's 18 years ago, and I think there's 16 years ago, and the world has changed, America has changed, gay people have grown up, and, you know, I think it's a better, certainly a better field for bringing it up and for being more, having more leadership about it.
I think we had this conversation before the election, and as we did with so many other activists, that, you know, the election isn't the end point here for,
right.
for our activism, for using new media and all these wonderful new tools that we have and everything. You know, there's so much pressure on the status quo to keep things the same. We really have to make our voices heard at the same time.
Exactly, and that is exactly what Barack Obama has been saying, is that, you know, I'm as good as you make me. And that you are a part of the process as well, that we certainly were part of the process in getting him elected, and now it's time to govern. And we have to, I mean, I think he's well able to handle, you know, any heat that we might throw his way, but I do think that we need to keep the pressure on. And yet, tomorrow in the White House, you know, they're having a Stonewall reception for 150 gay leaders, which is amazing. You know, it's like, yeah, we're upset with, you know, the pace of things, and we're ready to move, but apparently he's got his own, he's not in a 24/7 news cycle. I loved when he said that, but, you know, and it's going to come, perhaps not in our time, on our time, but, you know, in fact, tomorrow, and I don't think it's just, you know, it's something that would never have happened if McCain, God forbid, had come in, or, you know, it certainly wouldn't have happened during Bush 2, or, you know, you wonder even about Clinton, or, you know, Bush 1 and Reagan, it never would have happened. So it's pretty extraordinary. And I think they're giving signals that they, you know, do have plans to, you know, support gay people and make more things happen.
I like what you said earlier about kind of the impatience of young people, you know, how wonderful that was in some mm-hmm. sense that we have that now. And of course, that then indicates how far we've come, that the bar is set so much higher. We used to look for every slightly encouraging statement from a movie person on the cover of The Advocate or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. we used to look for these little tiny incremental things, but now our expectations are up there. But we also have to realize, you know, just as folks from other civil rights movements before us, that change is incremental. It mm-hmm. does take time.
And there's, you know, I think that there is definitely a lot that's percolating up. There's a lot that's actually happening, but we don't see it because it's at, you know, like a federal agency level, and it's not on a, you know, the big sitting down at the table signing something. But there is a lot happening. There's a lot happening in states. And so it is incremental. And yes, I get impatient and I was prepared to be disappointed in Obama, you know, and I still get disappointed. But that's like saying I'm so disappointed in patriarchy.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I do think that there is absolutely much more possibility for change than we have seen in the last, you know, last since Reagan years.
Again, our guest on the line is social commentator, lesbian comedian Kate Clinton, a recent author of a great book called I Told You So, kateclinton.com. Place to find out more. We invite your participation in our remaining minutes of this conversation, 321-1670. And we have Rick on a cell phone joining us. Rick, what's your comment or question?
Yeah, how's it going?
Good,
I
thanks.
Think one thing that they're afraid of are pink tanks. You know, they don't want pink tanks in the military. That might have been one of the things that they were, or, you know, a snazzier dress code. You know, the khakis that they were wearing, you know, they're just a good old boy mentality. But, hey, I was also wondering, when you do stand-up, have you ever gone in front of an audience where you know that, you know, you look up and suddenly you're facing a whole bunch of rednecks and, you know, you probably have to change your whole skit? I do a lot of adult material. And when you look up and you see the tabernacle out there, you know, it's kind of, those aren't going to work in front of them. You have to kind of switch to plan B.
That's a great question. I think that, you know, from teaching, I sort of learned when you're, you know, you've got your lesson planned and you've worked really hard on it, and then you look up and you think, oh, my God, this is not working at all. I learned how to sort of switch midstream. I don't think I ever change material, but I might change the order to make sure that we... I love to establish, you know, how much we have in common. You know, you might think you're a redneck, but listen, you know, I have a hard time finding a parking space, too, and I hate toothpaste tubes that don't work. And you kind of like...
Yeah, there are some things that you can come to common ground with.
Yeah.
I think it's easier for women, too, isn't it? I mean, being a gay woman, I think it's a little easier in society than a gay man.
I think probably the macho level is more, but
oh, really?
I, you know, more difficult for gay men comedians.
Yeah.
But I do think that just in general, the structure of comedy clubs right now is very male-dominated. It's really, I don't know where all the women have gone. You know, they're like, you know, used to get the middle act or the, you know, the opening act. But, you know, it's a kind of a hostile place a lot of times for women
in comedy
clubs. Well,
in the audience, there's a lot of males, too. So
yeah.
I mean, that's part of it, too. You
mm-hmm.
don't get as many women unless somebody takes their wives or even bachelorette parties. You don't see that much at,
exactly.
Those are real fun.
Yeah.
Well, Rick, we really appreciate your call. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, that brings up just another subject. I was mentioning earlier that later this summer you'll be part of an event with your friend and colleague Lily Tomlin.
Yes.
And you know, Lily, of course, just has contributed remarkable things as a storyteller. The mm-hmm. characters she brings just really advanced social justice in ways that are very resonant with your own work. But I wonder, do you at any point regret, I guess, not taking a similar path to Lily's in the sense that, you know, Lily is someone who you wouldn't often describe as a lesbian comedian, mm-hmm. having that kind of identification. And you know, while she certainly does encompass those themes in some of the work she does, again, it's not the center of what she does. I know, you know, she certainly had in recent times has spoken out about her longtime partnership with Jane Wagner and other things. But you understand what I'm getting at? Was that part of a conscious decision on your part, or did it sort of happen?
It was absolutely a conscious decision. I mean, when I started doing stand-up comedy, I was coming out, and they say when you know, the funniest material is what the truest is, and that's what I was talking about. So I've always called myself a lesbian comedian, a feminist humorist, and it's a great niche. You know, nobody else was doing it at the time. If you needed a gimmick, you know, just call yourself a lesbian comedian. No one ever stole my material. You know, it was a great thing. I really am happy that I was out from the beginning because I really feel that because I wasn't closeted, I didn't have to spend a lot of energy that I might have, you know, spent examining the wonderful things about the gay community. I didn't spend that energy trying to stay in the closet. And, you know, and I've just been able to talk about anything I want. And, you know, I'm really happy for that. I'm glad that I didn't, you know, when Lily was starting out, you know, it really would have been a career killer. But, you know, I'm living proof that you can do it and make a living and really affect people.
Oh, that's great. And you're just about to embark on a stand-up tour, so many other things happening. Apologize, we're down to our last 30 seconds or so, but
no,
Kate
no.
Clinton, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very, very welcome. Happy Gay Pride. Happy 40th Stonewall. And to more.
And same to you. We hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you.
Again, Kate Clinton is the author of I Told You So.
Thank you.
And KateClinton.com, place to find out more. We're going to have a great 4th of July show coming up, talking about some of the the early themes of the founders, some interesting things you may not know. John Quinlan with Ford Forum. Stephanie Woods also. See you soon.